Blog Talk Radio.
Okay. I'm on the other line too.
Having a bit of a problem trying to get in touch with our guest. I am going to try her one more time and then see if we can get her through the regular phone. Welcome to Sound Health Options. This is Sherry Edwards, your host today. I'm trying to multitask here.
Hello,
you're on the air now. I don't know why we couldn't get you before.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
That was kind of crazy. I'll go back and pick up and do my introduction now to our audience because we're on the air right now. Welcome back to everybody that is with us. We're glad you could join us. This May 23rd, 2010. I love that date, 2010. This is Sound Health Options on Blog Talk Radio. We are going to be talking with special guest Katriana McGregor today. She's the author of Partnering with Nature, The Wild Path to Reconnecting with the Earth. As I look at this wonderful little book, it's kind of a mixture of science and soul, and pretty much how man has messed up some pretty special relationships with nature. So we're going to be talking about Wisdom of the Wild. I'm going to put that title on it. I think Katriana is going to be talking about how we can be in tune with nature and in tune with ourselves. I think this show is going to be especially important to people who live in concrete jungles where plants are in short supply. So please stay tuned. We just got a few announcements. We're coming to you from the studios of Sound Health and the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology, which is a nonprofit registered 501c3. It's the largest alternative research center in Ohio, and our research centers around vocal profiling and low-frequency sound presentation as a diagnostic and treatment modality to help the body obtain optimal health. If you get near, drop by. Actually, we're in Nowhere, Ohio, east of Cincinnati, south of Columbus, sort of northish of Parkersburg, West Virginia. The show is brought to you today by our software program, Biohazard, which allows you to check your exposure to the biochemicals found in pesticides, chemtrails, the latest fungus outbreak in Oregon. And you can check how to get this free software. Please call 740-698-9119 or visit the guardiansofthepeople.com website. That's guardians, that's plural, ofthepeople.com. Our chat room is open today. We do have a question. What do you think can make you happy? We've been talking about that on several shows all along. What would make you happy? So we just put it in there. Would you please, what's the word? Put in order. What would make you happy? We put in having a meaningful purpose, money, personal freedom, being appreciated, peace on the planet, and inner peace. So those are the kinds of things we've been talking about the last few shows. So if you'd like to jump on the chat room, just go to blogtalkradio.com, Sound Health Options, and at the bottom there is a little chat. We've also posted there some of the articles that we're going to be talking about at the beginning of the show. If Richard comes in, he will also post those articles on our Dropbox, drop.io/nano voice, N-A-N-O voice. We're going to be with our guest shortly. but I have a couple of announcements and things to share. First of all, an apology for the deceitful posts that have been on my Facebook, particularly one from somebody named Randy, and he says he's attempting to reach 1 million persons who want help to make themselves happy. And he'll give you the clues, not for $300, not for $129, not even for $69, but only for $39, but only to you because you're special, and he's trying to reach a million people, happy people. It's just, it's full of platitudes and silliness that you could find someplace else free. And I got it off the air just as soon as I could, but he keeps putting it back, but I'll keep dumping it. So it's not something most people want or could use. I think people are beginning to use Facebook as nothing more than an advertising ground. So we have three announcements, and then we'll get to our guest. Well, maybe four. Recently, David G. sent me an email link to YouTube, and it was about a married couple who were trying to come from Canada to the U.S. to do some shopping. And because they couldn't name the exact store they were going to, they named the mall and where the mall was, but they couldn't name the exact store. The authorities took their car keys, searched their car, searched them, arrested them, harassed them, lied to them, bullied them. It's on YouTube under leaked recording on U.S.-Canadian border. It's horrible to listen to, and it makes you realize what freedoms we have lost. You know, I have my own freak thing that happened coming from Canada to the U.S. Again, U.S. border people, not the Canadian people, very nice. I went over there to do a lecture. And in coming back, I had some time, so I went shopping in the airport shopping malls there. And I collect miniature clocks, and I found a very interesting one. It was a replica of a short Civil War cannon. It had a little clock in the end of the barrel. I thought, oh, that's cute. So I bought it. Cheap thing, you know, like $20 or something. And coming back, they detained me, and they accused me of bringing bullets across the border. And I said, I have no bullets. If there's bullets in my luggage, someone else put them there. You won't find my fingerprints on them. And they insisted that I tell them where the rest of the bullets were, or they were going to do a cavity search. Now, I was like 58 years old at the time, so I didn't figure it was because I was good looking or anything. But I thought this was bizarre. I had no bullets. It just was a totally bizarre thing. And they stopped me and they strip searched me, which was totally humiliating. And finally, when they found nothing, I said, I want to know what this is about. I need to know. And they got out this sack, paper sack, that this little clock was in and said that this was a bullet. I said, bullets don't have clocks on the end of them. There's the receipt. I bought it at the airport. Now, that's the kind of silly trash that I went through and was humiliated. And if you listen to this, you'll see these officers. It's almost as if they're playing a prank. Now, I did a vocal analysis of the officer's voice, and they're nearly 100% emotional ego, not from any duty, not from any future event in mind. Their C-sharp is very high, and for those of you who've been watching the show or listening to the show, you know that that indicates a bully and manipulation. I am going to do a complete analysis of this chart. If their intent had been duty, most of the chart would have been green. This was just a game to these lying terrorists. These are U.S. terrorist thugs that are pretending they're, well, they are pretending they really are border guards. That's just, it's nuts what they were allowed to do to this Canadian couple. They told him, for one thing, that they had assaulted an officer, and they were going to jail for a very long time. And the assault was that one of the guards grabbed the girl by her arm, her elbow, and she pulled her arm away from him. And they said that was assault to an officer, and they arrested her. And the same thing with the guy. An officer touched him, he moved his arm away, and they, it doesn't say really that they arrested him, but it certainly you can hear them being thrown in a clinker in the recording. I looked up assault in the legal dictionary. Consisting of a threat or attempt to inflict bodily injury on another person. And certainly moving your arm away is not assault. These people lied, so just a warning if you're going to travel someplace. This is one of the reasons I quit traveling. I can't stand the harassment at the airport. So just know your rights and what's really going on. Okay, let's talk about something wonderful but pertains to this, an update of our Guardian meetings. We're having our third class today for the Guardian Network, and we'll be telling you about the voice being out of tune and how to use those frequencies for your golf swing muscles. Now, that's a bit frivolous, but we chose it because it's easy and it's golf season. And one of the programs we are going to supply to the Guardian Network people is this biohazard that I just talked about. So if you'd like to join us, go to Guardians, that's guardiansofthepeople.com. Look at what you need to do to get involved there and our mission statement and what we're going to do with providing you software so that you can take this information to your community. Okay, another article, this one from Madeline. I don't think she'd care if I said Madeline Nichols. And it's about Senate Bill S-510. And I'm quoting, makes it illegal to grow, share, trade, or sell homegrown food. If accepted, Senate Bill 510 would preclude the public's right to grow, own, trade, transport, share, feed, or eat foods that nature makes. It will become an offense to cultivate, trade, or consume food or agricultural products of one's choice. You have to buy it from a company. You're not allowed to grow it. You know, what about all of us farmers who have a garden in the backyard? We can't even eat it. We can't own it. We can't share it. You know, every year we have tons of tomatoes and we give them all to the neighbors. We're not allowed to grow it, not allowed to eat it, not allowed to share it. You know, and I'm going to ask our guest about, isn't it true that food grown in your own vicinity helps with allergies? But I would think, well, it says in this article that this is being pushed by Monsanto because only they know how to grow food. And S-510, it states in the article that we have posted on the chat, S-10 fails on moral, social, economic, political, constitutional, and human survival grounds. Here is a, hold on one second. I had to sneeze and I didn't want to do it in your ear. Here's a quote from a WordPress article about this. Monsanto says it has no interest in this bill and would not benefit from it. But Monsanto's Michael Taylor, who gave us BGH and unregulated genetic modified organisms, appears to have designed it and is willing, as an appointed food czar to the FDA, a position unapproved by Congress, to administer the agency it would create without judicial review. If it passes, S-510 would give Monsanto unlimited power over all U.S. seeds, food supplements, food, and farming. Here's just two of the things it says. It would allow the government to define the introduction of any food into commerce as smuggling. in the United States, whether it was grown here or not, and it would remove your right to clean, store, and have in your possession seeds. That's kind of crazy. That's worse than crazy. Okay, we also have an article sent to us by Renee Allman, and it's about Kevin Costner. It's about the oil spill. It's in response to something that we talked about last week about these two farmers who went in and showed the government how to clean up the oil spill using hay and straw, and how the oil would soak into the hay and straw, and you just clean up the oil. Well, this is in response to that. It seems that Kevin Costner, is a Hollywood actor, for those of you who don't know, has helped build some machinery that supports the environment, and he has sponsored the development of a device that will separate oil and water. They're having trouble getting it approved. I've got a message here. Do you have a printout of the officers that can be posted? I don't have a printout. I do have recordings. I will try to get that printed out on paper where the people are telling them, you know, how big a trouble they're in and the garbage. But go to YouTube and look at it. Look at the one that has over 1 million listens. That one is a lot better sound quality. So I've just got some questions about these articles. The Costner article, there is a quote here, and it's the LA Times one. It's about four or five up from where you're posting is. It says, Kevin Costner. There is an article there about the machine. So anyway, he's asking if anyone has seen other articles because he wants to post those too. Both of these things are about nature, with Monsanto and the food bill and Kevin Costner's oil cleanup. Man has done so much damage to the environment. It's just absolutely incredible. And then we also do damage to each other as you listen to what these border guards are trying to do. Okay, to our guest. Welcome to the show, Catriona McGregor, author of Partnering with Nature, The Wild Path to Reconnecting with the Earth. Catriona, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
I find your book fascinating, homey, earth-relevant, combination of science and soul. What motivated you to write this book?
Well, the timing really felt right, and I also speak in the book about a mystical experience that I had with a tree, which really motivated me to take the time to write now. And that was coming home from work. I talk about how I came around the corner of our house, and there in an empty lot was a beautiful tree that was glowing as bright as and softly as the moon. And I really felt that I communed with the soul of the tree, and had just an incredible experience with the tree. And then the following day, the tree was down, and that really prompted me to write for a couple of reasons. One is having that mystical experience, and I've had a few of those in my lifetime, but having it so closely related to what I call real time, or you know, our average day-to-day world, and seeing the tree had been cut down the next day. And then also understanding that the soul of the tree really compelled me, or the spirit of the land, so to speak, compelled me to bring this message to the world.
Do you think the tree was trying to talk to you and or is surrounding and say, I'm leaving tomorrow? Because they've proven that plants can communicate.
Yeah, the tree was definitely aware that it was not going to be there much longer, and chose to show itself. And, you know, we have this divinity within everything. Everything has sacredness within it, and, you know, it exists within the trees and the flowers and the animals as well as people. And, you know, the new Gospel of Thomas, which they've recently unearthed, you know, even Jesus says, you know, I am the light in all things. Pick up a stone and I am there. And so I believe the experience with the tree is something that can happen, and you know, has happened. We've also heard the story of Buddha and the Bodhi tree, and you know, the burning bush, and those kinds of things as well.
Well, I've had experience talking to trees, and people may think that is a little weird. We have a mulberry bush in our back, a tree, not a bush, a tree, which is very unusual for this part of Ohio. And there was another little tree right beside it that was an oak, and all the bugs were the wormy things were getting on the oak tree. And I hired these people to come out and get rid of these worms in this tree. And they went out there, and they came back, running back to the house. And these were students from the local college about tree farming. And they said, there's people talking out there. I had already known the oak tree was willing to sacrifice itself and its leaves to protect the mulberry. And that's what these guys came back, not screeching, but they were scared that there was some kind of life force there in the forest, but in our backyard. But I had talked to these trees lots of times, and I don't think that is unusual. I just think it's unusual that somebody would admit it. But since you are, I'll talk to you about your own experiences are in this book, experiences with animals and humans as well. It's such a mixture of science and your soul, and you blend it very well. I want to ask a question, though. What about us people who have no ability to grow plants and have them around? Because you talk in your book about how important that is. I have an absolutely brown thumb. You know, I can't grow indoor plants at all. Garden, I'm okay. But indoor plants, I kill them. It looks like I've over-fertilized them when I really haven't. So do you have any advice in your book about people who have that kind of problem?
I don't have any specific advice about that. It's more about, you know, just awakening people to the life or the divinity that, you know, exists within all things and within ourselves, and letting people know that it is possible to slow down and reconnect to nature and other living things in, you know, a deep and meaningful way. And there's some practices in there about, you know, just simply going for a walk or making a garden and, you know, spending more time outside, even if it's looking up at the stars at night, and turning off the computer and TV and, you know, getting more in touch. And I think that if people do get more in touch and you know, develop a relationship, that then perhaps can help them if they're having a brown thumb. Perhaps if they feel a sense of relationship to a specific plant, they'll be better at taking care of it, or there'll be more of a synergy between them and the plant too. And, you know, it is a new way of thinking. You know, many of us have really been raised in a culture that, you know, that plants are kind of these inanimate objects that just kind of grow, and we often don't respect them because they don't move like us. But one of the chapters in the book refers to plants as master alchemists, because while they don't move, they're incredible masters at, you know, taking energy from the sun and water from the earth. And, you know, they're trees that are 6,000 years old. There are some trees that are as high as the Empire State Building. So they have vast, vast amounts of energy, and, of course, they're the ones who keep the oxygen on the planet. Without them, there would be no oxygen on our planet. So we are very beholden to trees in many ways.
I just think I have too much energy, and that's why they feel like they have, they feel like they need to die, or that's their signal. Move me someplace else. We're not compatible here. And you said, you made a statement, it's in your book several times, and you just made it again, that we need plants as much as they need us. Can you explain that in the scientific terms that you have in your book?
I relate a little bit of the history of our planet, and when our planet was new, there was no oxygen in the atmosphere. The oxygen was held within the stones and the earth, and it was the ancestors of plants that created oxygen as the byproduct of their way of getting energy. And there was a time, in fact, in our history that was called the Oxygen Revolution, and also termed the Oxygen Catastrophe, because before oxygen came into our atmosphere, there were things, the main things living upon the earth were anaerobic or non-oxygen, capable organisms. So, but once oxygen was freely available in the atmosphere, that then enabled mammals and humanity to evolve, because without free oxygen in the atmosphere, there was no way for complex life forms to come along. So trees, the Celts refer to the trees as our ancestors, and they really are our ancestors. We wouldn't be here without them. And then today, it's very, very relevant for each person's personal health, because our health is, we're 65% oxygen. And Otto Warburg, who won the Nobel Prize in medicine, also found that cancer thrives in non-oxygenated environments. So, in other words, the more oxygen we have in our bodies, and the healthier we are, and the less likely we are to develop cancers and other ailments.
Well, in the beginning, with the ancient people, didn't their life depend on communing with the plants and knowing what was in them and what would heal this, and about foxglove and aspirin from willow bark and all of these kinds of things that the ancient people knew that we've sort of brought into modern stuff and adulterated it and put aspirin in a bottle, fake aspirin in a bottle. So I think man has really destroyed a lot of their ability to commune and listen with nature. And I don't want to be prejudiced here, but I totally feel sorry for people who live in cities, who live in concrete cities. I think they are missing out. Not all of us can live in the country. But what would you suggest to somebody that lives in a world of asphalt and concrete like New York, where they have very little ability to have a plant?
Well, I want to speak about that at a couple of different levels. And, you know, there are ways of developing cities that don't need to be so nature unfriendly. In fact, there was a wonderful commercial I saw recently. I can't remember what it was for, but it shows a city environment, and then it imposes upon that, it brings trees in so that, you know, there is a city street, but then all of a sudden they put the trees in on either side of the street, and it becomes quite beautiful. So, you know, there are ways to, first of all, create urban environments where people are living closely together that still have room for nature. And there's some wonderful new things that are coming out. There's a woman who invented a special kind of tile or brickwork that you can actually have plants within the brick, within the side of the building, but it doesn't erode, you know, it keeps the foundation stronger, it keeps the wall strong. So you can actually be looking at a building and it'll look like one big plant because it's got these green plants growing all along it. And of course, people can also grow ivy along their buildings, as well. And people are doing things like having living roofs in cities too. So there's living roofs are just, you know, again, bringing plants up onto the roof. So, and then, you know, there are some people who may be really uncomfortable or their health may not be right in the city, and I encourage them to think about that maybe they shouldn't be living in a city. City living is not for everyone. Some people really thrive on it, and it can be really, you know, fine for them. But if you're finding that, you know, if your listeners are feeling ill a lot or, you know, highly stressed, and, you know, maybe they shouldn't be there. You know, the city is not for everyone. And, you know, finally, I do have a chapter in the book about bringing plants into your home, into your building, and how that can help make your inner environment more pleasant and helpful.
We are going to be taking questions from the audience. I have one from my email. Here the number is 347 347-850-1407. That's 347-850-1407. And Alma writes, I just bought a topsy-turvy, which is a tomato plant growing up and down. When I got it, it came with a plastic mesh and a plastic container to grow it in. How do you think plants feel about plastic?
Well, it affects them in much the same way it affects us, and it's not good because, you know, they have shown that the little molecules from the plastic can actually come in, if you have plastic bottles of water, that they can actually come into your water. And so, it's not the best. I applaud you that you've got one of those, though. I think it's better to get the plant and have that ability to grow something and tend to it and know what it's being fed and gotten, and then eating it is more important than the fact that it's maybe in a plastic container. But if there is a way to put it in non-plastic, I would encourage you to do that.
Isn't there some plants that, like, grow in the air and really don't need dirt? I've seen them, like, in little onion-hanging baskets kind of things. Mm-hmm. Are those just as good?
I'm not as familiar with those. I have seen those, but I don't really, I'm not sure.
Here's another strange question. Should I feed my plant water from the tap? I don't like it. Why should they?
Yeah, I would encourage you not to use tap water if you have a filter, of course, you know, and it's inexpensive to feed them, you know, the water that you drink with a filter.
Four or five questions here. Do you think having plants around encourages your body to breathe?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, of course, yeah, I'd like at two different levels. One is when you have more plants, you'll have more oxygen. And one of the things I recommend for people, too, is to even bring plants in your bedroom. You spend so many hours, you know, sleeping there at night. And bring plants next to your workstation, or bring plants into your office, or next to your computer, or, you know, even there if you sit by the TV a lot, you know, bring plants around there. And so plants can not only bring more oxygen into your air, but they actually purify the air. And the humble little spider plant has been found to scientifically be able to take formaldehyde and purify it, actually take it out of the air. So it can be incredibly, incredibly healthy. And then I think when we have plants around us, we probably breathe more because we're probably more relaxed. You know, I really encourage people to make their home and office feel like a little sanctuary so that they can feel, you know, more relaxed.
I don't know if this question from our audience pertains, but you never know. She wants to know if you have any thoughts on how man is tearing up the environment, for instance, global warming and the recent oil spill.
Yeah, I do, and I think that reflects our disconnection from nature. And I do discuss in detail in the book about how that came about. And, you know, I talk about the trends, the historical trends that forged this different philosophy because, of course, most westernized societies or peoples do have this disconnect from nature, and it's largely because we don't value it to the extent that it's for real. We don't value the sacredness within it. And so because of that, when we also are looking to make money, and, you know, the oil industry right now is subsidized by $35 billion a year. Many people aren't aware of that. I would strongly encourage people to help the Obama administration. They are now trying to cut back those subsidies. There's bills and budgets out there. They're trying to cut the oil industry and from getting all our taxpayer dollars. And I, you know, write a letter or support Obama and his administration and their efforts to do that. It's quite difficult for them because the oil industry is such a powerful lobby. And I just want to say that, to me, the oil and the way that we get our energy, it's kind of a little bit of a madness, insanity. If we look around the Earth, plants, which are one of the predominant species, they get all their energy from the sun. And, you know, the sun is a beautiful thing and is hugely powerful and shines on every inch of our earth. And that's what we need to do. We need to get our energy from the sun. And we need to start investing in solar. We need to start getting it up on people's roofs and in people's cars and start getting that going in a big way. And when we do, we can meet every energy need that we have now or ever could have in the future.
Do you have a website where people can get information about these kinds of ideas?
Well, my website, I don't get as involved, not so much political ideas, but what I do is I offer vision and nature quests for people. I help people connect with nature at a deep, meaningful level, and I also help people balance themselves using the four elements, earth, air, fire, and water. And they can learn about that at naturalpathfinder.com.
Naturalpathfinder.com. I read, too, that you had started like a conservatory, a garden. Is that a place that people can come and visit? Awen, I think the name of it was. I can't remember.
Yeah, I have a foundation called Awen Grove. And Awen is an ancient Celtic term, and it's the same meaning as people may have heard of the Tao. Awen is the same as the Tao. It's about being inspiration, and inspiration through nature or divinity through nature. And Awen Grove is not a physical place. It's kind of a state of mind, a state of being. And through that foundation, though, I started a youth quest, and I also had scholarships for youth also.
To go to your... Are they weekend retreats, week retreats? What would somebody do in one of these retreats with you?
Well, and the adult quests are very, very different than the youth quests, just because, you know, it's a very different handling with the different ages. So for adults, I run vision quests and nature quests, and those are in, I take people to beautiful, inspiring places in nature, where they can learn about the animals and the plants around them. We also offer meditation techniques, and then I also help people work with the energy from the land. And I really find that we all have an ability to tune in to the energy of plants and of trees. So I've had a very high success rate in helping people to do that on our retreats or quests. And then people sit quietly and, in their medicine wheel if it's a traditional vision quest. And, it's often extremely peaceful. That people often have very powerful dreams and visions. And these can be very life-changing experiences. And, people have been doing this for thousands of years. They used to be called pilgrimages or walkabouts or quests.
Do you teach people about survival and herbs and...
You mean survival in the wild?
Like, you can eat that, but not that. Don't eat a castor bean, but you can eat a wild carrot kind of thing?
A little bit. That comes, some of the plant identification and what they're good for, and comes into it a little bit. But most of the people who come to me aren't so much going to be wilderness experts or, people out there doing survival. Most of the people who come to me for the nature quests are undergoing, a career change. Maybe they don't know what to do in their lives. And it's so important sometimes when we're at those crossroads to spend that quiet time. And that's often why people would go on pilgrimage or would go on quests, would be to gain, answers in their own lives. And people also come who are going through, relationship issues, who may want to have help with that. Or some people come because they just want to feel closer to nature or to the Creator. And so it's really, my work with people is really more about that, and then whatever information about the plants that comes in to help them, comes in that way.
You talk in Chapter 7 about sacred places, and you just talked about taking people to sacred places. How do you find one? Can us ordinary people find a sacred place?
Yeah, there's. I even have an exercise practice in the book, which is a map making, and that, along with some of the energy practices, can help people find their own sacred place. And there are really important sacred places in the world, and you know we've heard of many of those, like Shark Cathedral and you know Stonehenge, and many of those places have extraordinary energy within the land or the waters or are important ley line areas. But even within your own backyard, your own community, there'll be places in the land where your energy will be supported and in a much greater way. So it can be a sacred space to the point of really helping support a person's wholeness. And so there are a few practices there that can help people find that.
Do you think there's like a best sacred place on the planet?
That there's a what sacred place?
A best, optimal, so people can feel this energy. Like in Stonehenge, I did not feel a lot of sacred energy there, but at Machu Picchu in Peru, I did, and it's a whole different feel that maybe people could go to some sacred place on the planet that you could tell us about, and they could feel it, and then they could, that one might help them find their own.
Well, I don't think there's just one sacred place on the planet. I think there's quite a few that are extraordinarily powerful, and I think that given people's individuality and preferences and, you know, their past history in their life and their past lives, of course, can influence how they experience different sacred places. So, but I think becoming aware of, these places exist and just asking to be shown, asking the Creator to be shown, can help to guide a person to that place. So, you know, there's certain synchronistic things that can come up in one's life. And if someone really feels compelled to go on a distant pilgrimage to a place like Machu Picchu or Stonehenge, or there are incredible places in India and really all over the world, they could, put out a calling to the Creator. You know, the Creator is not distant. The Creator is here in every moment. And we can have a conversation and, and ask. And that's what's missed, too, by the Creator, is that full-hearted, asking, help or guide me. And, that's the same way in which I ask in partnering with nature that we approach trees and other living things. When we really approach them openly with an honest, open-hearted questioning and request for guidance, it will come.
Is that the same kind of thing that you're talking about in, I think it's chapter 11, where we can use that energy to heal ourselves?
Yes, we can really get guidance about our own lives. Many people, for example, who sit in Vision Quest or who come on the Nature Quest, receive incredible insight into things that maybe they've been grappling with for a while. And again, it's that connection between the divinity and the energy in nature and the energy and divinity within yourself. I talk about in the book about how the earth resonates at 7.8 hertz, and that's the same hertz as a meditating brain. So when people say, I'm going for a walk to clear my mind, there's a lot of validity to that. And so those kinds of things can come from sitting in quiet meditation with the wilds.
So matching our signature sounds or our frequency to the earth and then becoming in harmony with all things. And we talk about that a lot on this show, the difference between man's world and God's world. And once you discover God's world and all of the natural laws, then it's very hard to come back and live in the millions of laws that man made, sometimes even contradictory to themselves. Do you have any advice for helping people make that transition or live in those both worlds, or
live between man's world and the world of the Creator? I think it developing your relationship with the Creator, however that may be, and you know, one of the things that comes with us, I help people work with earth, air, fire, and water. We have all of those within us, and even Plato and many of the ancients, you know, understood that as well as Native Americans. We also have individuality within us, and that means that we each walk an individual path to the Creator. So, you know, the Creator feels comfortable. That's the way I express. To another person it may be God, to another person it may be Buddha, but all paths lead, individual paths lead to the same one, and that's the most important relationship that you can have in your life. And when you develop that relationship with the Creator, then the rest of it, and all humankind has the key to be able to develop that relationship. You know, we are spiritual beings, and we have the ability to go in that direction and to develop that. And when that happens, then the human order falls into place more clearly. We can see which laws or rules are good for us, for the earth, for other living things, and we can see which are not good for us, the earth, and other living things, and make those decisions. But I think above all, you know, strengthen and communicate with the Creator.
This is a very odd question from the audience. My brother is in jail. I've taken him several plants. He particularly likes philodendrons, but they won't let him have them. Isn't this against God and nature?
I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah, I didn't know that, that's not allowed. I can't imagine how a plant would be considered. I know they sometimes don't allow people to take things in if they think it's a safety issue. So I think that's horrible. And I certainly hope that maybe he can or she can ask if, what their concern is about the plant and, you know, is there a way that they can bring a plant in that they would allow? Is it the container or, I don't know what the problem could possibly be. But it would certainly be wonderful if he could have a plant in jail.
This is just a question for me. When you're talking about healing ourselves, through nature, you're not talking about taking foxglove and digitalis and herb things, but you're talking about the energy of nature and becoming in tune with it. Is that what you're saying?
I am. Well, that's most of my work is at more of that energetic level, that balancing level, working with the energy of earth, air, fire, and water to balance that within us because, you know, we do have all of these elements within us working, and so finding that balance can really help us get on path and, you know, strengthen our lives. But I do also speak to how plants physically can heal us and why that is. There's a chapter that talks about Bach's herbal remedies and how he discovered the healing property of plants by picking them up and putting them in his hand, and he could actually sense their vibration, and he understood what underlying emotional imbalance that they actually cured, and that's how the Bach remedies, which are now internationally, got started.
So it's all of it. I like this one. I'm drawn, I should say, to this one chapter. 13 is a nice number to me. Other people find it superstitious, but I love it. And in our research here at the Institute, we work with frequency and sound. And chapter 13 was fascinating because it's about the Earth's song. Can you talk about the what you call the Earth's nurturing and harmonious resonance?
Well, and, you know, it just gets, it's so wonderful today because now our technology is at the point where we can see things we could never ever see before, and we can measure things which we could never measure before in a physical manner. Of course, it's always been there in an energetic and spiritual manner. We've always known. But so that's how we now know that the Earth, it's called the Schumann resonance, resonates at that 7.8 hertz, and that is the same hertz as a meditating brain. And a meditating brain is at what's called alpha wave brain state. And the majority of the time in Western societies, most people, adults, spend their time in what's called beta brainwave, which is 12 or higher. It's usually between 12 and 15 for each individual. And that's a much higher cycling. And we obviously need the beta brainwave. That's the state that we're in when we're problem solving and doing those kinds of things, that kind of intense analytical activity or problem solving. And so, you know, it's a good thing, we need it, but we tend to spend too much time in beta as adults. And I even reference in there that I believe that that's another reason why we have so much Alzheimer's in Western cultures. There's less Alzheimer's in non-Western societies. And, you know, when your brain is operating in beta state all the time, in a worried state or problem-solving or analytical too much, you're almost starving your brain of oxygen. And there's much more oxygen that flows through your brain when you're in this lower, more mellow kind of brain wave, you know, the alpha state. And, of course, children under the age of 7, I believe, spend more time and just naturally in the alpha brainwave state. And in that particular chapter, I talk about how when we're at that alpha state, which is around that 7.8 hertz, we're able to communicate. That's when most people have really incredible intuitive communications with other people, and when they measure great healers' brainwave states, when they're in the motion of healing or the moment of healing, they are accessing alpha state. And when I'm communicating with the animals or the trees, I know I'm in alpha state. So in a sense, we can almost look at it like the universal natural or divine radio station for us to be on. And the more that we can bring ourselves to that, the more information and the more that we can communicate with things at the kind of more sacred level.
By way of frequency, 7.8 correlates to a calcium cell salt.
Huh.
That's just from our research.
No.
I love this idea of the Earth song and the idea of the universe, one verse, universe, one voice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's just a great kind of feeling of what goes on. Do you have ongoing groups that can help others through this?
That helps others through, you mean to come to in greater connection with nature?
Well, do people all need to go to you and go to your Nature Path retreats, journeys? Or do you train other people to do this, and there's people throughout the U.S. doing your work? Or?
Well, I have started to train other people, but it's still, you know, relatively small. I'm not like a big company or anything, and but I do offer the retreats. Most of them are in Northern California, and then I usually offer one a year in New Zealand and one in Scotland. And you know, I am open to going to different places too, but I of course have to do what I call reconnaissance missions to places in advance to check out the sites. And and then I do offer by internet and phone totem animal, spirit animal discovery, and the balancing, working with the earth, air, fire, and water. And so I have worked with people, you know, internationally and nationally on those programs.
So they would get in touch with you at naturalpathfinder.com?
Yes, they can get in touch with me at naturalpathfinder.com, and if they wanted to learn more about, what's going on, they can get the book, Partnering with Nature, at amazon.com. They're actually having a special on it now, too.
Yes, and it has 5 stars. That's the highest rating it can have. There's some wonderful reviews there. It's on sale now for $10.66, which I think is wonderful. Oh, $10.88, I just lied. Paperback, and it's on Kindle. That's great. I love my Kindle. I don't know if all the pictures and the explanations you have would translate to the Kindle. I think without those, a lot would be lost from the book. Because I really like
images,
it.
You know, the animals in the book, and I was so glad the publisher allowed the us to go the full length and put the illustrations in. And they're just little simple, you know, black and white sketches, but they're from, most of them are from photographs that I took of animals that I know. So I really asked the spirits of the animals to come into the book and, you know, help and convey some of their wisdom and being. So my intent is that when people, you know, view the images of the animals, that they're getting a little bit of their, you know, beauty and wisdom through that.
There's a lot of Native American information in your book, too, and connections, I should say, connections. That is just really beautiful. There is somebody asking a question that I know you cannot answer. Well, I shouldn't say that. I know I can't answer it. Do you think plants evolved and then humans evolved in, I'm trying to read a very long email here, in companionship? And is it the mission of the people to mind the plants, or is it the mission of the plants to care for the people?
I love that. That's a nice one. And yeah, well, the plants are our ancestors. They're kind of like the elders on the planet for the mammals. And you know, plants were here first. And even if you read the Bible and the way things in which things were created, and of course they're here for their own purpose because they were created before us. So if they were only created for us, they would have been, you know, created after us, but they were created before us. And they really helped us. They're the elders. They helped to teach us. And, you know, we still do things for plants that at an unconscious level that some, for example, many people bring Christmas trees into the house and, you know, we bring in this evergreen and we, you know, decorate it and put lights on it and, you know, a shining star. And these are all actions befitting a sacred object. So at a deep, deep unconscious level within us, we understand the sacred dimension of trees and how they really help us at enormous ways. And so that exists there. And then as far as our role towards other living things, that's one of the main themes of the book, addressing what I think the role of humankind is. And that is to care for these other living things in a way that no other species on Earth can do. You know, it's not the fact that we make tools or the fact that we have incredible brains that makes us truly unique and in the image of the Creator, so to speak, but it's our ability to have compassion and love and relationship for so many different living things. And, you know, whether it's Julia Butterfly Hill and the redwood tree and Jane Goodall and the chimpanzees, I mean, just think of all the individuals who've had these amazing relationships with other life. And I think when we become more in tune with that mission on Earth, we can create an Eden-like existence here for ourselves and for everything else.
Like going back to our roots, literally. That's good. Thank you for being with us, Katriana McGregor, author of Partnering with Nature, The Wild Path to Reconnecting to the Earth. Amazon gives it 5 stars, and this is a quote from a review. We, as a race, will not thrive, evolve, or even survive unless we return to partnership with our Earth. This author urges us to reclaim the strength of our connection with nature on both a personal and planetary level. Thank you for being with us, listeners. Thank you, guest. It was great. Please remember that no one has all of the answers. If someone was perfect, they would spontaneously combust and not be here. So listen to your inner self about who you are, your lessons, and those who truly support your potential. Please join us next week when we will be bringing you another great show. Thanks for listening. We're not streaming, but we're still on the air. We had a caller that had a question, but they've hung up now, so I'm going to end
the
show.
Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
Sherry, this is Richard.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm going to turn the music off here. Thanks for helping with all these postings. Did you go listen to this thing happening on the border?
It made me nauseous.
It's scary.
I already posted it to Facebook and send it to everybody I know on Facebook.
Even if we have to do a special show, I am going to get this information out about the intentions of these people and what they're really doing.
I sent it to a person who does a regular radio show, a terrestrial radio show, out of Washington, D.C., through the public radio station group. I don't know what it would be called there. It's called KPFA here. Being other like public radio, I don't know what to call it. Anyway, so I emailed her about it and said, "Can't you get these people? I think it'd be great if she'd do an interview with the people, if she could."
I wish we could find out who it is. It
yeah.
doesn't say even on the guy who posted it. He just says somebody sent it to him. There's a
right.
long, 10-paragraph explanation.
Yeah, yeah.
On one of them. So if we could find that out, it
yeah.
doesn't sound fake to me. There is a piece missing in
uh-huh.
the middle where they've taken away his wife and they're abusing her
right.
to get his compliance. So there's a piece missing in the middle. And I don't know if that's when he really got upset or what's going
right.
on.
And the only other, well not the only other, but the only flag for me is the question that comes up in my mind is why did the people who this was happening to have a recorder going? I don't know,
yes.
Was it a kind of a setup? And I don't mean that anything was bad. I'm just, that would be a question from somebody who does a lot of research and looks at a lot of stuff. My question is, why was this all recorded? I'd like an explanation to that, just to dismiss that as, in other words, did they know this was going to happen, kind of? Had they been across and had this problem before? Or, what is the setup that they're recording this?
I asked that question on my Facebook. I said I have three questions here about it. One, could it have been posted by one of the patrol people, whatever they call themselves,
right.
rangers
probably.
Or whatever?
Uh-huh.
And I would think that if that happened, it would also have been on there what happened to the woman when they took her away from her husband in trying to get his compliance and cooperation.
Because
you could tell from his voice he was very upset.
Oh, he was extremely agitated, yeah.
But then all that's missing. So it looks like if somebody was really trying to be a whistleblower, they would have added that.
Yeah.
But if they did, then somebody would probably know who they were, and they'd probably lose their job.
Right.
The other is, I think you can hear on there, leave all your stuff in the car, cell phones, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So if it was a cell phone and they arrested him, why didn't they find it and why didn't they take it?
Right. Well, that's just a question of clarity. As I say, that mostly comes from a position of, doing a lot of audio and video and other kinds of research. I'm just curious, is it a pocket recorder? He just happens to, I know people who carry, I'm one of those people that carries a small digital recorder most of the time so that when I have a thought, I can record into it. And is it, it could have been something like that. It could be, I just can't tell. that
part. Well, I admit that I am prejudiced because of my run-in with the American authorities. And
I had that. I had an incident. I almost chimed in, but mine was, you know, a long time ago in the 70s. I was coming back from Canada at Niagara Falls, back into the United States, and it was in the 70s, and it was myself and a high school roommate had traveled around the United States, so we were in a Volkswagen camper. I had a beard and kind of shaggy hair. We weren't hippies, but, you know, we were Californians, California boys out traveling around. And we were stopped, and we were asked to get out of the vehicle, not nearly in the same texture. I mean, it was the 70s. It was much more, you know, big deal. So you're coming back from Canada. However, we were stopped and detained because it turned out that there was somebody with my same name. The flag that came up was that there was a suspected murderer on the run, and that's why we were detained. But it was handled completely differently.
Well, these guys, because they couldn't name the store they were going to.
And that was the flag for these guys that suddenly he, like, flamed out. And that was actually part of my question is, when you said that you have the you did the voice analysis, what I was asking about the printout, what I meant is that did you have something, an image of that print that voice read that I could post to the nano side, to the Dropbox?
I will shortly. Hold on. There's somebody else calling here that I need, but hold on just a minute.
Okay, sure.
Oh, that's all going to be on the recording here.
Oh, I see. That's what that sound was. The show just ended.
Oh, did it end?
I'm guessing. I don't know.
We still wouldn't
because
be
I
on.
Just heard the because I just heard that kind of hissy sound, and maybe it just stopped the recording automatically after a certain period of time.
That could be.
We didn't say anything horribly bad.
That was good stuff. But I've got to take this. It's from our computer programmer.
Okay.
So I want to take his call. So I'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Bye.